Welcome to Sibylline Podcasts, part of our World Risk Register Threat Monitoring Service. These podcasts are released on a weekly basis, covering timely and relevant topics. In these discussions, we hope to shed light on evolving scenarios and provide actionable predictions and implications. We hope you enjoy listening and welcome any feedback. Hello and welcome to another Sibylline podcast. This time we're going to be talking about North Korea. And with me to do that, I'm joined by our senior analyst for Asia Pacific, Amy Reynolds. So Amy, what's the latest?
Over the past couple of weeks, we've seen quite a significant transformation in the short-term situation on the Korean Peninsula. While the recent detente hasn't broken down completely, we're no longer seeing the positive atmosphere and various diplomatic gestures that was the case around the time of the recent inter-Korean summit. Instead, we've seen quite a rapid return to a frostier environment with harsh, belligerent rhetoric and criticism and even threats. This has then culminated in US President Donald Trump canceling the summit late last week. And while there are currently efforts and discussions going on between North Korea and the US to see if the summit can be rescued, ultimately, whether this succeeds or not, relations have quite significantly cooled off.
So was Trump's calling off of the summit a real surprise move, or was that sort of the culmination of growing antipathy between the two?
Yes, I'd definitely say the latter situation here. The cooling of relations and the re-escalation of tensions doesn't really come as much of a surprise to us. The spotlight has essentially come back onto the irreconcilable underlying differences between both parties, with the US demanding denuclearization and threatening force by suggesting they might implement a Libya-type approach, whereby after scrapping the nuclear program, Gaddafi's government was overthrown by rebel forces supported by Western airstrikes. So Kim doesn't want to give up his nuclear weapons, of course, and he certainly has no intention of falling victim to a US-backed coup. And we feel as though this fairly obvious and extreme divergence in stances would have come to light anyway at the summit, should it go ahead. It's very hard to see any other possible outcome. So in order to avoid this inevitable impasse, it kind of made sense for Donald Trump to call off proceedings now and avoid that kind of inevitable embarrassment if it gets that far.
Okay, and do you think that, so Donald Trump's seen as a sort of ultimate deal maker, do you think that he has called off the summit in order to try and encourage Kim to come to, you know, to come sort of bleeding back and say, oh no, you know, let's resurrect it, you know, to try and get a better platform for the US? Or is that not the case? And is there any chance of that happening? Or do you think, what's the outcome for North Korea?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, while that might have been a desirable outcome for the US in doing what they've done by canceling the summit, ultimately, I don't think it's going to be a very successful one, given the fact that the North Korean regime has actually come out of all of this pretty well at the moment. The US being the ones to cancel the summit, at the same time as you've got Kim and various other officials stating that they still want to meet with the US. Kim looks to be the reasonable one in this scenario. He comes across as more of a statesman than a tyrant, while he's been making these various symbolic concessions, such as the recent closing down of the nuclear testing facility. And then, as he hoped, Kim's been using this improved public image to reduce international pressure on the economic sanctions. And this seems to be succeeding as far as China's concerned. There are various recent Japanese intelligence reports that suggest that China are helping the North Korean regime to circumvent the oil sanctions by supplying their boats. So with China helping to reduce the economic pressure, any progress that may have emerged at the negotiating table between North Korea and the US becomes an even more distant prospect, as the US have simply lost their leverage.
Okay, so are we at a stage now where the summit is definitely not going to happen, or is there some possibility that it will actually take place still in the coming few weeks?
I think there is definitely a possibility that it can still take place. A lot of this depends on the talks that are currently taking place in the US between both parties. But I think the key point here is that ultimately, whether it takes place or not, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference to the long-term situation and the kind of overarching security threat. The underlying issues remain, and any kind of solution is a distant prospect, whether the two parties meet or they don't.
Okay, so you know, you mentioned China here and how the Chinese are, that what evidence suggests that the Chinese are now increasing support to North Korea and, mm-hmm. and starting to ease the sanction regime, which is perhaps what sort of brought the detente on in the first place. So
yes.
What does this mean for US-Chinese relations? You know, do you think China has been spurred into supporting North Korea because of a deterioration in US-Chinese relations?
Yeah, I certainly think there are some interesting ramifications there for the broader US-Chinese relationship. And the cooling off of relations on the Korean Peninsula and the cancellation of the summit has definitely got something to do with that. I think as soon as the situation started to sour with North Korea, the US and Donald Trump in particular were quick to blame China and blame Xi Jinping for sort of influencing Kim during a meeting in Dalian. And while China's official line is that they hope that the summit ultimately takes place, at the same time you've got Chinese media talking about how the US have been hoodwinked by North Korea and throwing around various criticisms like this. So I think essentially the situation on the Korean Peninsula is a further reason that we're seeing a more general deterioration in the Sino-US relationship alongside kind of other ongoing predicaments such as trade tensions and China's increasing militarization in the South China Sea.
So is it as simple as being able to say that from China's point of view, perceived US aggression on trade embargoes and so on is being countered by Beijing by using North Korea as a bit of a stick, or is that a bit too simplistic?
I think that's fair. I think all of these kind of different facets of their overall relationship interact, and China certainly wouldn't be one to shy away of sort of provoking one fire to detract attention from another, or vice versa. So that seems to be a fair assessment to me. Yes.
So in the long term, then looking forwards, throughout ever since the Olympics in South Korea, the Winter Olympics, which almost marked the beginning of the détente, when North and South sports teams were cooperating, delegations were going between the two. Following the election of President Moon in South Korea as well, that's mm-hmm. kind of sparked all of this off. Throughout all of that period, our reporting here at Sibylline has been a little bit sort of dark, I suppose, and saying, well, this is all very nice, but actually it doesn't change the underlying fact that these tensions are fairly irreconcilable. And so looking sort of forward into the very distant future as best we can, you know, what do we think's on the cards? Are we fundamentally looking at a continuation of the kind of tensions that we've seen? Where do we think that this ends up?
The current situation is definitely one of cooled off tensions. Well, sorry, cooled off relations, and a return to a more familiar tense standoff. I don't think we're likely to see any dramatic escalation of tensions to the point of a military clash or confrontation. It's more likely that we're sort of settling back into a fairly familiar pattern over previous decades of waxing and waning hostilities. And the current phase of that is a return to the old stalemate. And I think the implications of that are not going to be particularly significant for any businesses operating in either on the Korean Peninsula or more broadly in the region, because it's ultimately all too familiar to them.
And so, from Pyongyang's point of view, this period of détente, I guess, has bought them time. They continue presumably to develop their nuclear deterrent in the background, albeit that the Pyongyang-ri testing facility is being dismantled. But my understanding was that it was now unusable, and
yes.
So the deconstruction of it, or the sort of pulling it apart, whatever, the decommissioning, that's the right word, I presume, is hugely symbolic anyway, rather than anything else.
Yes.
Do you think that North Korea now sees itself as a bona fide nuclear power and that they have achieved those aims and now they are sort of out to use that leverage on the international stage?
Well, I think it depends somewhat on exactly how you define nuclear deterrent. I think while it's clear that North Korea have amassed certain nuclear capabilities, it seems that they do still lack the ability to mount these on ICBMs and send them long range. However, whether they've achieved this or not, I think it's difficult to see North Korea using this to kind of try and gain influence and manipulate other players in a sort of outgoing way. I think more accurately, it's a defense sort of thing. They're hoping to safeguard their own regime and ensure their own survival. And I think to do this, they're probably likely to maintain their political isolation.
So essentially, so long as the sanctions aren't too severe and that survival is possible, we're looking at a return to this period of stagnation that we've seen for the sort of past decades.
Absolutely, yes. I think North Korea in many ways have achieved what they've exactly what they set out to this year by getting China to lay off the sanctions somewhat without making any real concessions, and we're going to see a return to what we've known for quite some time now.
Brilliant. Well, Amy, thank you so much for covering all of that for us, and we shall continue to release further reports through our World Risk Register service and further podcasts, of course, as things develop. So we'll keep a close eye. For the moment, that's it, and thank you very much for joining us, and we hope to hear from you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you have found this podcast useful. If you would like to learn more about our services, or if you have any questions or feedback, please get in touch at info@sibylline.co.uk.